We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I am your host, and as always, the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Now, this episode we are partnering with International Day for Universal Access to Information, which presents an opportunity to discuss e-governance and artificial intelligence with a view to assuring the right to access information. Of course, this year's big sponsor for the event is Google. Google are very interested in the right to access information, your information. They want it at any cost. They will pay any fine, bug any website, to get that precious, precious data. Google, don't be evil. But if you're going to be evil, at least be discreet about it. We're also partnering with International Day for the Total Elimination of Nuclear Weapons. Poorly timed day on the back of the Barbenheimer phenomenon exploding into cinemas in the last month or so. Or is it just a piece of psyop marketing from the Mattel company in order to distance their surprisingly fun My First Feminist Corporate Starter Pack version of revolutionary representation, where the CEOs actually help you solve problems rather than doubling down and making them worse? You decide! And of course, finally, we are partnering with International Translation Day to celebrate. We will be translating this episode into multiple languages. So this is a slow process, of course, as I'm the only one on the team here, and I'll not be able to pay a professional to do it. So we'll be attempting to translate it using nothing but the Rosetta Stone and some gumption. So obviously we are going to be translating this episode into the foundational languages of translation itself, ancient Greek and Egyptian hieroglyphs. Starting with this bit right here. Feather, feather, small bird, sideways G, bird, smaller bird, semicircle, owl, small bird, sideways tongs, semicircle, feather, owl, bird, at symbol, scribble, feather, feather, small bird, empty eye socket, sideways G, bird, scribble, hand doing like that sort of dog shadow puppety thingy, and candy cane with no stripes. Send your translation attempts to the Bearer of Weird News at ohmygodwhyareyoudoingthisspendyourlifebetter.com. Additional translations down the road to come will include Esperanto, Latin, Dothraki, Klingon, and of course, French. Now, before we get into the episode proper, I'd just like to say we are going to be heading on the road with my show, Wage Against the Machine. First, I'd like to thank people for coming out to the Sydney Fringe Festival shows. I'd like to thank people for coming out to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival shows. I'm pretty sure I mentioned that in the last episode, but just in case I didn't, thank you to everyone who came out. I really appreciate your time and for committing to supporting me, supporting the podcast, seeing the shows, and hearing some fun stories. We'll be going up to Wynnum Fringe, which is, of course, in Queensland. I'll be there performing November 22nd and 24th. So only two shows, a little theatre called The Lunchbox. So if you've got time, if you know anyone who's out in Brisbane who would like to check out the Wynnum Fringe, send them my way. I've got some fun stories to tell them. We'll, of course, be touring a bit more in 2024, but we're locking down a lot of dates and all that sort of stuff right at the moment, so nothing to announce on that front. If you want to support the show and you can't come out to one of the live shows, then great, that's okay. Don't stress too much. You can always sign up to the Patreon. Of course, that is patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff, where you get bonus episodes, well, bonus stories, really, per episode. And you want to access those. If you want a little bit more of this, then you can join the Patreon to get access to the bonus episodes. We've got a really fun one this week. But if you want to check it out, you've got to sign up to the Patreon. Until then, of course, I will be the bearer of weird news. We're going to be starting with the headlines as always. Dimex, the bookseller, has confirmed details of 1.2 million customers have been shared on the dark web in a data breach. Now, upon hearing the news buyers of the 50 Shades trilogy are desperately trying to get enough money together to change their identity so that they can't be identified for crimes of passion against literature. Even more amazing, Dimmicks are leaning in, calling this their brand new customer engagement program. Nobody calls more often than someone who's desperate to hear back from you. Sign up for Dimmicks Customer Rewards. All you have to do is buy a book. We'll get your details. And so will everybody else. Elon Musk has predictably suggested that all users of the app, formerly known as Twitter, may have to pay for access to the platform, lest it be locked behind a paywall. Looks like Twitter has finally become a proper representative of false information, that it can now confidently put up a paywall and force people to pay to receive the circle jerk of confirmation bias that they are used to getting. What is traditionally known as the Murdochification of access to bad news. Woolworths has reported a record $1.62 billion profit on food inflation, and you too can make billions this financial crisis by simply using this one trick: holding families hostage by charging way too much for their basic necessities. A woman from Northern Ontario said she had no idea why a box was delivered to her home containing more than 1,000 Trojan condoms. 1,000 Trojans unexpectedly found inside a special delivery. Why do I feel like I've heard a story very similar to this before? The delivery was made via Amazon and appears to be an attempt to defeat the popular Netflix and chill saying by offering up the clunky alternative prophylactic and prime. Maybe a sheath in a spaceship, or a digger and a dejected delivery driver? You get to choose which of these aspects of the business you want to most acknowledge. In discussions about tracking climate change, Prince William has warned against doom and gloom, saying a dose of realism was important. People whose houses have burned in climate change-induced fires or were flooded in climate change-induced floods were relieved to get this much-needed advice from the family whose carbon footprint is greater than the entire country of Greenland. Out of habit, of course, he followed the talk by moving the Andrew, formerly known as Prince, to a new remote location where he can't do anything to undermine the family, because that's usually how they solve their problems. French President Emmanuel Macron is extending an olive branch to video gamers after previously blaming computer games for the rioting in France earlier this year. Macron backpedaled the statement, saying he was sorry when he realized it was video game operators who run the military drones and now wouldn't even be able to retire for a few years more because of him and his actions. A company that makes chastity devices for penises that can be controlled over the internet exposed users' email addresses, plaintext passwords, home addresses, IP addresses, and in some cases, GPS coordinates due to flaws in its servers. While this at first seems like a mistake, this was actually part of the premium subscription package where you get to give over control to a complete stranger and can only get the device unlocked if you agree to pay the extra $1,000 to the company and a bonus on top of that to your controller. US Representative Lauren Boebert will no longer appear as guest speaker for Conservative Youth Conference after she was tossed out of the musical Beetlejuice for being caught groping and being groped by her partner, being loud, obnoxious, and vaping during the performance. If I'm honest with you, it sounds like she'd be the perfect speaker, as she sure as hell was acting like a teenager at this show, and the kids could really use someone who can relate to them on their own level. Services Australia staff have received an apology from management over the Robodebt scandal, with the agency's chief executive saying that workers who enforced the schemes had suffered an unfair toll. Oh no, did the staffy waffy have their feeling wheelings hurt? Oh, Dylan's, are you okay? Are you okay? Look, did someone try to forcibly take money that was rightfully yours from you in a false accusation of theft and wrongdoing, causing unnecessary financial and emotional stress, spiraling into a years-long, probably life-shortening tumble down the rabbit hole of bureaucratic incompetence and governmental indifference? Well, that must have been really hard for you. Maybe a better question. Are they all still alive? Did any of them, in a desperate moment of hopelessness, take their own life? No! Huh. Well, sounds like they are doing a lot better than some of the rest of us. Australia's highest court has ruled that Qantas broke the law when they fired about 1,700 ground workers during the COVID-19 pandemic. And now they will have to pay fines and make up for the workers they let go. The new CEO, Vanessa Hudson, has been ordered into mediation after, out of habit, initially offering the fined workers Qantas vouchers and free extra checked baggage, and occasionally some extra legroom. Two bears on an Alaskan military base raided a Krispy Kreme donut van that was stopped outside a convenience store during its delivery route. Three words, guys. Three words. Free donut day. It's a win-win, really, as the bears got all-you-can-eat donuts and Ranger Smith no longer has to worry about Yogi and Boo Boo, as shortly after this, they entered into a diabetic coma and passed away. Veterinarians said they had all the donuts that they could bear. That's the end of the headlines for this week. We're going to head into the bigger stories. First up, drug economy news. We start this episode in Colombia. Did you know that they have a family of wild hippos in Colombia? And as of 2021, the offspring of hippos, once owned by the Colombian drug king Pablo Escobar, can be recognized as people or interested persons with legal rights in the US, following a federal court order, despite the order not carrying any weight in Colombia, where the hippos actually live. Isn't that fascinating? The US is a wild place. I guess that's why they demonize South America so much. So people won't look too closely at them as a country who makes wild and crazy decisions about the legal status of hippos in another country. Speaking of the demonization of South America, it's looking like cocaine is set to become Colombia's main export, even overtaking oil as production of the narcotic continues to expand as the government takes a more lenient policy regarding drugs. So, it looks like we are ripe for a reboot or fusion season of Narcos and Parks and Rec, where the Colombian Parks Department takes over the coca plant maintenance. Some sort of libertarian, anti-authoritarian department head, maybe like Juan Swanson, runs a department of lovable rogues in direct combat against up-and-coming groups of gangsters looking to obtain the cocoa plant for their own personal gain. I think it would work. I think, Netflix, give me a call. Colombia's cocaine industry generated an estimated $18.2 billion in export revenues, just behind oil export revenue, which was $19.1 billion. With the country's oil exports dropping 30% in the first half of this year, and its cocaine industry still growing steadily, Bloomberg estimates that 2023 will be the year when Colombia's cocaine revenues outpace revenues from oil. It's the highest levels since 1991, or as it's better known, Narcos Season 3. Now, when former President Ivan Duque came to power in 2018, the government shifted to more aggressive war on drugs tactics rather than pursuing social solutions to coca productions, not even trying to avoid a war through more traditional means like entering into peace talks with drugs, maybe trying to denazify key drug areas and ignite an interventionist coup on democratically elected drug programs, replacing them with our own preferred choice of drug management systems. These have always worked wonderfully in the past, so I don't know why they wouldn't have tried them. Current Colombian President Gustavo Petro has called the war on drugs irrational. And look, he isn't wrong. When we could institute a multi-decade peacekeeping mission on drugs, where we would enter into a war without the hassle of declaring war, which, frankly, I'm honest, has proven to be an ineffective and unnecessary step in the modern war process. Petro has proposed regulating narcotics, expanding voluntary crop substitution programs, focusing enforcement on drug gang leadership, and increasing social funding in production areas. And who could blame him? The country produced 1,738 tons of the drug in 2022, with a total street value of $193 billion. Billion, guys. That alone is worth more than the GDP of Qatar. And I can see why you wouldn't want to give that up. And that and the street cred from being the biggest seller of cocaine in the world. That really makes people take you seriously. I'm suspecting this is why Australia refuses to give up our position as the number one coal seller in the world. Guys, in the world. You hear me? In the world. We aren't number one in anything else except that. And instead of attempting to eradicate coca bush farms as it did in the past, the Colombian government has initiated targeting exporters and laboratories that turn the coca leaf into cocaine, which has led to a surge in crop yields for coca bushes in the past few years. To end the drug war in Colombia, the 62-year-old Petro, an economist and former left-wing guerrilla, is pushing an audacious new initiative dubbed Total Peace that aims to bring all the country's armed groups and criminal actors to the table to negotiate demobilization or surrender, thus ending decades of bloody cocaine-fueled conflict. It's just good to see that Petro is a fan of the third season of The Wire. It's underappreciated, if I'm honest, and it's overshadowed by the kids in season four, which, look, don't get me wrong, that's a great season, but I really think season three brought an interesting dynamic to the table, and it just sort of gets overshadowed in the whole collection of things. Still better than season two. Much better than season two. And spoiler alert for The Wire, but by now you should have watched it already, so that's on you. Now we have the US out here acting like Marlo, the up-and-coming gangster who refuses to get involved with the co-op and instead wages war. I mean, why would the US not want Colombia, the number one supplier of cocaine in the world, to clean up its act? I wonder why that is. Well, the Bearer of Weird News has offered a choose-your-own conspiracy theory section for this story. So remember, to remove the ideas that you feel don't best appeal to you and your worldviews. Okay, here we go. Here are your options. Number one, the US, as the world's police, benefits greatly from the instability because their big power is in having military / paramilitary forces in all countries who can report back and provide information as is needed. Number two, if they pull these paramilitary members out of Colombia, they will have to return to America until they find somewhere else to have a pseudo-war, and there are enough trigger-happy Americans in the country as it is. We don't need to send more people who are just keen to shoot somebody into that country. Number three, if other countries sort out their major issues, it just makes America look worse for not sorting out their many issues at home while they wander the globe fixing other countries' problems. Number four, eradicating the drug trade, much like removing guns, is a real problem for Hollywood. Without guns and drugs, what kind of movies could you even make? And Hollywood movies are America's true power, because no matter how much they fuck up, we keep taking them back because they make good TV and movies. Moving on now to RoboCop news. We are moving now from South America to its noisy neighbor, the United States of America. America is again straddling the line between being itself and being a parody of itself as it is looking at guns and robots, the key ingredients in making a RoboCop. How close are we to making a RoboCop? Is it close? A coalition of Massachusetts lawmakers, civil rights groups, and robotics industry leaders are coming together to support a bill that would make it illegal to outfit robots with weapons. Oh, Alright, so... Okay. This is a good story. Don't worry, guys. This is a good news story. A good news story from America, which is pretty rare these days. Pretty rare. Where's John Krasinski now with your good news stories, huh? I mean, look, it makes sense. They have been creating most of the media that we base our fear of robots on over the last few decades. So, best live up to the lesson that you've been trying to teach us over and over again. Don't give robots access to weapons. Problem solved! Quicker than normally. Can we play the news theme? Play the news theme. No? We don't seem to be playing the news theme. Is there more to it? Don't tell me there's more. I don't want there to be more. There's more to this. Okay. What have they done wrong? Okay. The bill filed by State Representative Lindsay Sabadosa and State Senator Michael Moore, not that Michael Moore, would prohibit the manufacture, sale, and operation of robotic devices or drones that are mounted with a weapon. The legislation would outlaw the use and sale of weapons-mounted robotic devices. It would also ban the use of them to threaten or harass people and ban the use of them to physically restrain individuals. Those that violate the laws would face fines ranging from $5,000 to $25,000. That sounds pretty good so far. What am I missing? There it is. The US military and its contractors would be exempt from the new laws. Yay. Yep. It's them. They're the problem. Oh, look. And there's even more. Seems law enforcement officials disposing of explosives and private companies testing anti-weapons technologies would also be exempt. I mean, if one group has proven it is responsible, well-behaved, and not driven by hard, ingrained systemic issues that drive them towards the oppression of particular members of society over another, it's the US police and military. Frankly, I can't think of a more restrained group, except maybe a rabble of zombies who've just crossed the threshold into Frank's big brain storage and fresh brain emporium. Those guys would be extremely restrained. This does sound like a potentially spiraling pit of doom, a Pandora's box of ham-fisted foreshadowing hubris that will play out as expected and prove to us we weren't cynical, but we're a societal Cassandra, doomed to never be listened to, despite always being right. But this is good. I was beginning to worry that I'd die a death that wasn't meaningless, accidental, or preventable for a moment there, and what is the point of life if I don't get to have it cut tragically short to further my causes? Did you think that I'd be better off spending it living a humble existence of humility and happiness? Maybe raising a family of well-looked-after children to go on to live their own humble lives of humility and happiness? Buddy, seems like you don't understand politics. Everything is an opportunity to further my cause. The bill contains a requirement for law enforcement officials to obtain warrants before using robots to enter private property or conduct surveillance in situations where a warrant would be necessary for a human officer engaging in that work, which already puts them ahead of corporations who will use their loyalty cards, in-store cameras, and online cookies to invade every aspect of your life, creating a complete profile of you, which they will then give to the police for free, negating the need for police to actually do any monitoring of you in the first place, let alone getting a warrant. Because once they've formed a profile picture of you, they can send in the RoboCops! Dead or alive, you're coming with me. Americans were torn on the matter, as all Americans want the right to not die by clearly preventable means, but they've also realized that restricting the rights of some robots to freely carry guns was a blatant violation of the Second Amendment, their unalienable right to die by hubris. It's currently the number one cause of death in the United States. Fun fact for you there. And that's why they changed their flag from the Stars and Stripes to a picture of that dog in the house that's on fire meme. But this, again, is an opportunity. If they restrict the rights of robots to carry guns, then we just need to make humans closer to robots and vice versa. Thus begins the rise of the cyborg. Yes, the human-robot hybrid, so close you can't tell where one ends and the other begins. We can't just skip straight to Terminators. You gotta build it up with a generation of Robocops. The human hybrids will retain their human-born right to bear arms, or, as we are going all in, their right to gun arms. Slowly, we will increasingly blur the human-robot divide until less and less of the human is visible, and the only thing stopping you from buying a gun will be being able to identify either a bus, motorbike, or a set of stairs in a little box, as well as being able to tick a separate but equally little box. Moving on to stepping down news. Former Prime Minister, man who still surprisingly has his job, and man waiting to score that sweet, sweet advertising deal for Engadine brand adult diapers, Scott Morrison, has shown his face again, this time in Perth, as he told a Perth congregation that the Christian journey is not a linear one, warning of an increasingly hostile world in a sermon that he gave, revealing the secret truth that at least his brand of Christianity is not even a little bit interested in going forward in time. No, they want to go backwards in time, which does make a lot of sense as they are somewhat obsessed with covering up and changing the past. They spend so much time manipulating the past that they keep forgetting to check in on the present and what's happening right now. Morrison praised the virtue of faithfulness, saying that God has a way of reminding us who's in charge, and it's not us. Thank God for that. This statement of his belief in humanity's limited agency over worldly affairs actually explains a lot about the way that he sees the world and operates within it. He successfully failed his way to the highest job in the country, taking virtually no action to show that he was capable or worthy of a position of responsibility, and yet he achieved it anyway. Which was reflected a lot in his Jesus, not only take, but keep the wheel steady as we drive towards this brick wall of destiny as God has determined form of leading the country. Sure, there is a theoretical brick wall ahead of us, but to be honest, we haven't crashed into it yet, and I'm very confident with God's help, we never will. These brick wall alarmists need to take a long, hard look at themselves and think about what is best for the country. Now, the most interesting part of the sermon was the bit during which he claimed that he stepped down as Prime Minister. Oh, I'm sorry. Are we calling incredible amounts of incomprehensible neglect and destructive fuckery leading to a mass exodus of confidence from the party so behind on modern ideas and practices that they still think great hydrogen balloons will be the next great innovation in technology and are wondering when the Titanic will finally make port in New York, as it's been a hot minute, right? That you got voted out in a vote so catastrophic even Queensland voted in members of the Greens. Are we calling that stepping down now, are we? Interesting. In that case, I'd like to do what history has failed to do and take time to thank Osama bin Laden for stepping down as the leader of Al-Qaeda, all of Vladimir Putin's political opponents for stepping down from trying to defeat him in a political arena, and for the human race for stepping down from trying to control Mother Earth as she goes through a form of planetary menopause and experiences a few hot flushes rather than persisting with this mass special delusion that we call climate change. Moving on now to sexy cereal news. Oh yeah, breakfast. They say it's the most important meal of the day, but it's the most sexy. And if the people in the following story are correct, it could be the most important meal of your eternal soul as well. A conservative, legal, non-profit run by former Trump advisor Stephen Miller filed a federal civil rights complaint against Kellogg's, yes, the cereal company, accusing them of, oh, get this is too good, running illegal diversity policies and sexualizing their products. What a day. Well, Miller, you and your conservative mates need to consider, while it was considered an aggressive box, eventually the FCC fully approved of the box art of combined Frosty Flakes and Fruit Loops, with the prominent Toucan Sam respectfully bottoming for Tony the Tiger. And they don't normally weigh in on box art, but when they saw this art, they couldn't help themselves and they just screamed, "Oh yeah!" Sure, they mixed up the famous catchphrases, but it was good to see them easing into the whole situation with some humour. While this was just another empty, meaningless attack on one of the thousand fronts of the culture war, and will be forgotten within days unless something particularly funny comes from it, like Ben Shapiro doing a 20-minute monologue on how things have gotten out of control and he doesn't understand how anyone can find cereal sexy, and he tried to fuck a Fruit Loop once, but it was just dry and unpleasant, so no different to his regular sex in his experience. This is particularly great if you don't know your history. See, Kellogg's was famously started as a company by two guys, W.K. and John H. Kellogg. Well, turns out old John Harvey Kellogg, the inventor of Corn Flakes, did not care about profits. No. For him, cereal was not just a health food. He believed a diet centered on bland foods like cereal would lead Americans away from sin. One sin in particular, masturbation! Yes, cornflakes is a psyop to get you to stop choking your chicken. It's hardly a surprise the first cereal box had these drooping flowers on them. This is the ideal position your penis should be in, according to John Harvey Kellogg. If your flower stands, the cereal needs to be more bland. I think that was their first catchphrase for cornflakes. Though, obviously, this failed, and with Kellogg out of the way, they knew that they could make fun of him by putting a giant cock on the box. This is what happens when you refuse to learn your history, guys. You end up saying something stupid. Moving on now to Nauru news. Nauru and Manus Island might not seem like the obvious place to go for a data breach story, given only 10% of the population actually has the internet. But Australia has found a way. And as a result, the federal government could end up paying millions in compensation over asylum seekers kept in detention centres on Nauru and Manus Island. Has there been a leak of the treatment of asylum seekers? Has some news about the truth of the horrors of detention centre life gotten out? Oh, no, that's not it. No, that's not it at all, of course not. We are too early to address the horrors of our time in history. We will probably need to wait another 80 or so years before we address this with some sort of symbolic gesture, maybe an apology or an official declaration of a whoopsie, or if we're really being serious, we'll upgrade it to a whoopsie doodle. Things that are getting serious, you know, when that happens. Or they could receive Australia's highest symbolic gesture, an apology symbolic gesture. Yeah, that's right, an apology with ice cream and with a cherry on top. If you've seen the price of cherries recently, you'd actually understand why this is our highest symbolic gesture. So, what is it that we are compensating for this time? Oh, there it is. The government may be liable for tens of millions of dollars in compensation to asylum seekers after it posted their personal details online while they were in immigration detention. We live in the worst fucking country. So let me get this straight. We took these refugees, forced them into an island prison detention on the false pretense that they might be terrorists or some shit, tortured them, restricted access to journalists and the internet for fear that they would expose us for what we were doing, an act that ironically would have saved them from having their details stolen by corporations in a big data steal of 2000s, only to save the corporations and foreign government trouble of hacking us by just leaking the information ourselves, resulting in information being used in some cases to allegedly threaten asylum seekers or persecute and even jail their family members. Do I have this right, Australia? Fuck. These are the same Australians who are supposedly providing cyber training for Ukrainian officials. Well, I can see why we started bragging about the Bushmasters at every chance that we got. Our cybersecurity skills aren't worth shit. Now, granted, most of that training was just teaching the Ukrainian government how to throttle its own internet speeds, fail to implement a successful high-speed internet rollout, and where to get a leather jacket that says, I mean business. But that last one is the most important step, and you can't even think about doing the rest until you find yourself a sweet leather jacket that says, I'll fix your internet security problems simply by whacking the side of this motherboard and yelling, Aussie, 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 ee, ee, ee. Nearly 10,000 asylum seekers have had their privacy breached nearly a decade ago now, but it seems only those who suffered extreme loss and damage will be eligible for the more than $20,000 in compensation. The total cost of the Commonwealth could run into, as I've said, tens of millions of dollars, even though not all of those whose privacy was breached will be allowed to claim compensation, a method that we have come to know as the Robodebt compensation maneuver, where you reach high and hard and you do as much damage as possible and hope that when the compensation inevitably arrives, you'll only be forced to look after a small percentage of the people that it's fucked over. It's a risky play, but it seems to have paid off for multiple governments now, and I expect we'll see it again in the future. The information of 9,528 asylum seekers, more than 2,500 of them children, was available online for 17 days and accessed more than 100 times, including from addresses in China, Egypt, Pakistan, from masked anonymous locations, and from Russia. The very Russia we are offering cybersecurity protection from to the Ukraine. We've rolled into Ukraine like a con man Harold Hill from the Music Man musical, offering up music lessons that we are not qualified to teach. With the greatest gift of all being this lack of actual help in the war has dragged out the length of the war and helped drive windfall profits to our mining sector. Which seems to be the only grift we know how to pull, filtering ever-increasing amounts of money into the coal industry. So to help Australia learn how to better give lessons on cybersecurity, we, here at the Bearer of Weird News, have compiled our own list of top tips for cybersecurity, which we are offering to both the people of the Ukraine and the Australian government for no cost. We're just that good. We simply ask, in return, that maybe you loosen up some of that public funding and put it towards the arts. In this case, the arts of talking bullshit about the news. Us. We're talking about us. Okay, so here we are, the Bearer of Weird News top tips for cybersecurity. Number one, of course, the most obvious one, invest in a VPN. As of May 2016, Australia held 1,193 people on Nauru at an estimated per person cost of $534,000 a year. A huge spend, huge. It's more than they spend on the Prime Minister. We spend all that money and we didn't even shell out for a VPN. I hear that they're just giving away discounts to those things. You could use a new one every year and never run out of YouTubers to give you some sort of discount code. By the way, if you're looking for a VPN, you can get one from Bearer of Weird News brand VPNs. Just put in the code government money for a discount. Number two, check if you've already been involved in a data breach. Now, are you a government of a nation? Is that nation notorious for having slow Wi-Fi and once lost a bunch of sensitive information when they caved away in a filing cabinet? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you need to spend a little more money on keeping secure information. And this is a crucial word out here, secure. Number 3, check the strength of your passwords. There is nothing internet nerds love more than to remind people of than the importance of a password nobody can remember without a brain that can remember the first 20 digits of pi. And don't dare repeat it anywhere to any other platform. Every one of them needs to be unique and distinct. A quality password can be the difference between local news and international news. So we need to change all the passwords on Nauru from thanks for the cash Morrison 12. All of the S's are dollar signs. It's a very obvious password. Number 4. Be the oppressors, not the oppressed. You'll notice there is no details about the people who ran the detention centres in Nauru and Manus Island. Almost never is. Dimex, Optus, nobody but the customers ever gets leaked. So, if you're gonna be involved in a data breach, be the leaker, not the leaky. Number 5. Store all files in a computer hooked up to dial-up internet. Upload speeds are pretty terrible in Australia, but even Australians get hacked. You really need to dial it back. Literally, take inspiration from George R.R. Martin, who writes his Song of Ice and Fire books on an old Commodore 64. So hard to access, even he doesn't seem to be able to access the files so that he can finish the books. So it's old technology to the rescue. We will use the old copper to the node method, where the high-speed cables go right up to the node, and then they get throttled by ultra-low speed boxes that slow the internet right down to the first days of internet. Nobody's going to get enough information to fill a floppy disk, let alone a whole drive of secret files. Number 6. Just don't have files. Every time that information is needed, you just make up a batch of fresh numbers and names. There is no continuity on a system with no memory. If everything is leaked, it won't matter. It's all made up anyway. It's just formalizing the way the governments run a lot of their grants programs and expanding it to its logical end. Moving on now to art news. Been a while since we checked in with the world of art and all its money laundering, historical stealing, and philosophical questioning about the nature of what everything is, even itself. But we're back for another dose of art news. And to start us off, we're touching base with the outcome of an old story. Listeners may remember Danish artist Jens Hanning, who back in 2021 was making commentary on the cost of living before it was cool. And he did maybe the greatest thing an artist has ever done, at least recently. He turned in 2 blank canvases titled Take the Money and Run, in reference to being paid 532,000 kroner by the museum to replicate his own art pieces, an average Danish annual income and an average Austrian annual income. But with a twist, this time it was a different currency. The aim being to depict the average annual income of a person of these countries. Well, he has now been told to repay the roughly $75,000 that he was paid to create the work. Do you, museum, honestly think this artist still has this money? Honestly, do you know how little money there is in art? This wasn't even a high income. This was the average income. And we are living in a global cost of living crisis. Sorry, we are living in a global working class cost of living crisis. That's much more accurate. Obviously, the rich are still doing fine. Except Elon Musk, who seems to be really desperate for money because he's thinking of charging money for a worse version of Twitter than the one that he bought. Feels like the previous owners of Twitter did their own version of the Take the Money and Run long con, where they made Elon Musk feel special on this one social media platform and convinced him that it was good and that he should buy it. Genius. That is a real piece of art right there. Gotta respect the hustle. But back to the story. Hanning told Danish broadcaster DR in 2021 that Take the Money and Run was inspired by what he saw as insufficient payment. He said recreating the pieces as intended would have required him to fork out about 3,300 euros or about $3,500 in today's money from his own pocket. I think we found the problem, guys. Our old friend, the cost of living crisis, rearing its ugly head to widen the divide between the rich and the poor, and then blame the poor for not working hard enough, while congratulating the rich for kicking them while they're down and having the foresight to take their wallet while doing it. Hanning came in confidently when he handed back the blank canvases, explaining that this was the work, saying, "I encourage other people who have work conditions as miserable as mine to do the same. If they're sitting in some shitty job and not getting paid and are actually being asked to pay money to go to work, then grab what you can and beat it." He called it a general call to action, which is a stance that if you saw my show, Wedge Against the Machine, you'd completely understand that I support unequivocally. A Copenhagen court has ordered Hanning to pay back the sum to the museum that commissioned the artworks. The gallery runner has said that the museum is not wealthy and that Hanning's actions left the museum's curators deeply upset.
"Oh, did the curator get upset? I thought you were an art gallery. Aren't you exploring the edges of life, looking for the fascinating? You know, you want to hang out with the interesting people. Oh, until they prove too interesting for you, why, you fucking cowards. You need to deal with the consequences of your actions."
And it's not like the gallery rejected the work. They promoted the artwork in the news, in their mailouts, on social media. The art gallery said it was a recognition that despite intentions to the contrary, artworks are part of the capitalist system that values a work based on arbitrary conditions. The valuation of art can be about the name of the artist, which gallery the artist is affiliated with, and the collections the work is a part of. Oh, I get it. Oh, I see how it is. So if this guy was more famous, you'd be cool with being scammed. Because you were being scammed by somebody famous. Somebody cool. Well, no wonder nothing has happened to the Church of Scientology. Smart play getting all those famous people involved. I must remember that for future episodes of this. The gallery even acknowledged even the missing money in the work has a monetary value when it is designated as art, showing how the value of money is an abstract concept. Yeah, no shit. Correct. Money is the shared delusion that capitalism runs on, the fairy dust that makes capitalists fly into space. We know this, and the fact that they themselves are acknowledging it's art, art that they got paid for by the public and promoted, and they contacted the media getting a bunch of free publicity, way more than they would have if they had gotten the, frankly, at this point, very boring piece of safe-commissioned reboot art that they had requested. So, art gallery. You paid an artist to create a thought-provoking piece of art that would generate news and get people to walk through your door. And you got well more than you bargained for. A piece of art that commented on the cost of living and that was a sequel to a previous work with a twist. Sounds like you got exactly what you wanted. I don't see the problem. I'm not one for victim blaming, but frankly, this is on you. If you suspected that this would be an issue, why didn't you give the guy fake money? You're in the arts. Buy some fake notes. They use them for TV all the time. And maybe you think that TV and movie scene is too small and that there aren't enough fake notes to go around. And that's fair. That's very fair. You don't have the biggest TV industry around. Okay. Well, as an art gallery, you probably know a modern artist who can create fake money for you. Or, and this is a last resort, but it did work, there are active con artists in the area and they'd happily take a few $1,000 payday to make fake notes for you. They'd probably do it for free. Anyway, they're doing it all the time. At least this time, it'd be a guarantee of pay and not jail time, when that to me sounds like a bargain for doing what you're going to do anyway. Seeing as the gallery refuses Let's do it ourselves. Hire a con artist to create the notes for the gallery and fuck over the institution. They were foolish enough to not use fake notes, and now they need to learn the importance of employing artists properly. Moving now to space drug news. Space, the final frontier. These are the adventures of the Drug Lab Enterprise, its 5-year mission to explore strange new drugs, to seek out new highs, and classic shower thoughts like, well, if the universe is everything, and the universe is expanding, then what is it expanding into? What's this about drugs in space? Did we discover some kind of space toad that we can all lick? No? No. Of course not. It's never a space toad. Why is it never a space toad? Alright, what do we got? The US Air Force has denied a request from VADA Space Industries to land it in space manufacturing capsule at a Utah training area. Or, as Gizmodo has delightfully put it, space drug factory denied re-entry to Earth. Perfect. Perfect headline. You got my attention, Gizmodo. Alright, so this drug factory is a capsule launched into orbit, which autonomously grows crystals of the drug ritonavir, an antiviral medication used in the treatment of HIV. To help cover the cost of development, they were making a little meth on the side, of course. The cost of living is getting really high, and they aren't made of life-saving HIV drugs, you know. Sometimes you gotta sell a little on the side just to make a buck. Now, the orbital factory is stuck in orbit after being denied re-entry back to Earth due to safety concerns. The US Federal Aviation Administration didn't grant the company permission to re-enter Earth's atmosphere. A spokesperson from the FAA said the company's request was not granted at this time due to the overall safety risk and impact analysis. The Federal Aviation Admission staff have seen all the alien films and seem to have learnt the lesson that none of those characters seem capable of learning. You don't just bring back space stuff to home, do you? You don't. Be that home your spaceship, or the terraforming base of a fledgling society attempting to make a new planet its home, or your home planet. You don't do it. Only NASA or similar bodies dedicated to science get to drag space stuff home, not capitalists. And that goes double for capitalists, you hear me? Triple for space capitalists. They are the most reckless of the capitalists, and that includes old man Jenkins, who went to the trouble of dressing as a fire-breathing monster to scare people away from the abandoned factory so that he could buy it up cheap. He could have gotten away with it too if it weren't for those meddling kids, you know. And we know this to be true because Jeff Bezos, who stole from his employees and flew himself beyond the Kármán line into technically space, looked down on Earth, and instead of experiencing the phenomenon known as the overview effect, his thought was that we should move factories to space, presumably so they can start charging their staff for oxygen, the last truly free commodity. And this is just the beginning. Look, in 2031, the ISS will be decommissioned, plunging into a bigger watery grave than Leonardo's ghost on the deck of the Titanic, screaming about how much room the selfish Rose had on that door and how they were going to have a real talk when she showed up in the watery afterlife. After this plunge, NASA will rent space on the commercial space vehicles instead. Which is great, because companies heavily vested in producing off-world are pushing the narrative that the number of products produced in space will ramp up by the end of the decade, since they will no longer need to go solely through the ISS to get to space. And you should invest early. Okay? Get in on board with that. This isn't like those other investments, those other shady investments like NFTs or cryptos or speculative markets that will leverage the power of celebrity to overinflate their value and have the initial investors leave, taking the initial rug that we built it all on top of with them, leaving the rest of us to attempt to keep all of the items previously on the rug, now flying in the air in the exact same positions that they were in before the rug was moved or pulled, at least until we could convince someone else to hold them in place for us, like a cave that only can be exited if someone else enters in some sort of children's fable. They'd never do that to you. Not with space. Plus, how nice is this rug? Don't you just want to put some of your valuables down on it and turn your head in the safe knowledge that they are placed on the safety of the rug and that that rug will never be moved? Come on, get on board. After all, the more privately owned shuttles in space, the larger the opportunities for off-Earth factories. Granted, the part that they have yet to figure out is once they build these off-world factories, how they will get the children and immigrants being intimidated with deportation to work in them for pennies on the dollar up there. Also, the making of child service spacesuits, as no government has spent money on such a thing yet, so the capitalists can't just take the government's existing publicly funded research and pass it off as their own work, at least not yet. But a libertarian capitalist loves nothing more than a challenge they can just cut corners on, but this time in space. It's gonna be like the Titanic submarine all over again, but in space and with children and immigrants. Plus, it's going to be increasingly important to move the factories off-world. The planet is becoming way too hot for a standard sweatshop. People will die before we can even train replacement workers, which will drive up the prices of fast fashion and cheaply made replica products. Which will drive up the price of fast fashion and cheaply made replica products that we sell for a premium because they were made in space! Also, do labor laws even count in space? Could say. Who could say? Maybe they don't. Maybe they don't. Only one way to find out. Build a factory and bend some of the laws until we figured out exactly how flexible space makes some of these rules. We'll call it an experiment. Maybe we can get some government funding. Don't worry. The cost of oxygen will be fair. Market driven. And we won't even add surge pricing when the demand is high. Like when people are working extra hard, which you will be doing all of the time. Plus, in your fancy spacesuit, you won't even need to take toilet breaks, so productivity will be through the roof! And that is the end of this week's episode. Thank you so much for hanging around till the end. I really always appreciate you guys making it this far. If you've enjoyed it, do share it around, give it a like, share it on whatever platforms. Remember, it's 1 star or 5 stars or else, what's the point? And if you want to support the show, you can either sign up to the Patreon or you can come see the live shows. I am touring the Bear of... not the Bear of Weirdness. I am touring Wage Against the Machine next year in a bunch of places, still yet to be determined. For those of you who are part of the Patreon, come and check out our bonus story. It's going to be on Murdoch and his retirement. Fun times. The rest of you don't get to hear that. But if you sign up to the patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff, you can suss that out. Until then, thanks so much, and goodbye.